You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 24th, 2010.
Hi, this is Zoe Sprankle reporting from the North Station in Boston, Massachusetts, and I just recently was at the BLC conference, which stands for Building Learning Community, in Boston. So I actually went by myself to a woman named Peggy Sheehy's workshop called Have You Seen Avatar? And it was all about Second Life. If none of you have heard of that, it's an avatar. Well, so you make your own avatar, and she'll tell you the rest.
And this is Bob Sprankle sitting next to my daughter in North Station, and I did not get to go because I was off seeing another workshop. So this was very cool because we were able to do two captures of two sessions, and we'll put the other one on as well. Did you get inspired to go into Second Life or some virtual world?
Definitely.
Okay. All right, enjoy. We will keep bringing the workshops to you from the Building Learning Community's summer workshop in Boston, downtown Boston, by the Allen November Group, 2010.
Starting one right now.
It's already recording now.
Slash Instructional Technology Facilitator. We all have these great names, don't we? At Sucker Middle School in Rockland County. And, are we good up there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, well, where did my presentation go? I'm going to hide this. And, what was interesting is this particular presentation has had many incarnations since 2005 when I started my work in Second Life. And when I submitted my proposal to Allen this year, the title of it was No Avatar Left Behind. And I don't know if that was too close to home for him or what, but he changed it to, or maybe he just wanted to cash in on the movie, he changed it to Have You Seen Avatar? And that's interesting because this presentation, No Avatar Left Behind, did have this as the opening slide. Are you familiar with the Hindi greeting, Namaste?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, loosely translated, it means I see you, which was the Navi greeting in the movie Avatar. Everyone has seen Avatar? Yes?
Yeah.
Zoe, you saw it? It's a focus of what happens in a virtual environment. The whole process of identity is a big, big piece of what happens. So, it was actually a very appropriate little transition that November Learning made for me. Please do Twitter. Hashtag BLT10. I am Peggy Sheehy on Twitter. I am pretty transparent in any venue in which I participate. And I always like to preface, anytime I speak to a group of teachers, anytime I speak to a group of administrators, anytime I speak to corporate-ish people, this is where it's at for me. Because we're not going to get anywhere just throwing this technology into the hands of kids. I can't foresee any real learning journey going on without some kind of an adult mentor, a guide, a facilitator, a partner, a colleague who is going to take that wonderful, natural, inherent skill that these young people have with technology, or not even skill, comfortability, take that and make sure that as they use it, they are guiding it with empathy and understanding, safety, intelligence, caution, creativity. So, I'm not all about the technology. I'm all about the learning. Hold on a second. We're going to stop that and make sure we have sound up. I'm going to ask your indulgence. Has anyone seen this already? Okay. This sets the stage. stage for my kids. I don't know your kids, but I'm going to take relief and say your kids are pretty much like my kids. And this particular movie has a long history. It was made by the kids of my tech club, myself and my colleague Marian Malmstrom, who is No Food Kid in Second Life, did the editing. And it was submitted as a keynote presentation for Don Tapscott's Digital Kids concept. Here's the deal. We put it up on YouTube. It went viral very quickly. My kids were empowered. A certain very well-known educator, conference runner, author, Ellen November, wrote to my kids and said, kids, this is great, but it's 6 minutes long. I need you to cut it down to 3 minutes. Now, when we did this editing and this job with this movie, we said, okay, 3-4 minutes, 5 tops, that's what people want, that's what a good video is. And the kids had an 11-minute movie. And they edited and edited and edited and edited, and they got it down to just under 6 minutes. So when Mr. November spoke on their work, and they were very honored, he said, I need to cut it down. So the kids held a meeting. And I said, look, whatever you decide, it's up to you. You know, the pros are to cut it down. Mr. November says he'll be playing it for audiences all over the world. You'll reach more people. The downside is you feel like your message is succinct and cannot be cut down anymore. So your movie, you decide. And they came back to me and they very politely said, we decided that you guys make us sit here for 6 hours a day. You can sit for 6 minutes. That was it in a nutshell. And I said, well, okay, you need to say that answer, Mr. November, back. Say it politely, but say it. So I'm going to say it to you. It's 6 minutes long. I think it's important. Firefox just keeps wanting to come up, doesn't it? Love the auto recovery. That's not working. So that big introduction might have been for naught. For
not.
There's sound.
Is there sound?
But it's very low. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not hearing it at all. I'm hearing it out of my computer. Not out of the board. Well, that's okay. We're teachers. We have to move on. Basically what that movie did was say the important statements that they made out of it were things like, I can't construct my future with the tools of your past. We want you to trust us. We want you to guide us. We need your help. We need your wisdom, but we don't need your permission. We're there anyway. So it was really quite a... It's on YouTube. It's No Future Left Behind, to continue with the theme. So feel free to go out to it. Use it. Please respond to my kids, because they're still following this avidly. And again, I was telling you that this presentation has had many evolutions since 2006. It started out as a new dimension of learning. Then we moved into moving, M-U-V-E, into Second Life. Finding Your Tribe was about professional development in Second Life. No Avatar Left Behind, and now I'm not good at math, but my avatar is. Which is a direct quote from one of my students. We're going to talk about how that could possibly be. So again, I gave you a little overview of the map, and I'm really going to do my best to condense the 5 years of our stuff in Second Life, but I want to make sure that I'm hitting your interest points in this. So again, I don't think you need the rationale of why this is important, but I'm going to give you a little bit of it so you understand my thinking. And my thinking started with the whole movement about, what was it, about 7 years ago? Where the Shift Happens movies came out, and well, that was 2005, Friedman's book came out. And everybody started buzzing about this shift, and the kids are different, and the digital natives and the digital immigrants, and all this stuff was coming out. And I kept saying, okay, that makes sense, but what does that mean to me as an educator? What does that mean to me? What do I need to know or be able to do now that I didn't know or was able to do previously? And I think what it really boils down to is what I need to know or be able to do is what these kids will need and how to provide it for them. And I can't do that because I don't know what they need. We are, for the first time, this is a quote from my friend David Warwick, we are teaching a generation of students and we have no idea what the future will really look like. But we do know that they'll need to be able to learn and that they'll be able to need to unlearn and relearn. So I feel that's one of our biggest jobs right there, is to ignite the fire in learning, to teach them how to relearn, unlearn, learn again, ask hard questions. Sorry, go ahead. Now, I went on from there to start, I started that librarian thing. I read everything I could get my hands on. And these were some of the books that influenced me. I liked what Daniel Pink said about the left brain and right brain stuff. And I don't know how scientifically or in terms of neuroscience accurate it is. I've heard that it's not. But it made sense to me. And what made sense to me is that the old left brain, analytical, linear thinking that we based our whole academic system on is not going to be the prime real estate for the fields that are opening up to the students we are educating now. Those students are going to need to develop more creative thinking, more empathy, more understanding of culture. And that left brain, right brain thing made a lot of sense to me because I basically said, those are the attributes that got me excited when I was in school. When we were doing those kind of things, that's what made me excited and wanting to be there and wanting to learn. So if I was to ask everyone in this room your definition of literacy, I'd probably get 25, 30 different answers. So I put forth to you that I think we can agree, and tell me if you disagree, but I feel we can agree with the fact that literacy is evolving and that our biggest responsibility is to stay on top of its present incarnation and make sure that we're addressing it and including it and acknowledging it in our students' learning. Anybody have a comment about that? That wasn't a challenge, that was an invitation. I realized that Tony was kind of like, you know, got a comment about that? So that's the literacy war, and it's alive and well, and you know, I jump into librarian groups and I hear one thing and I jump into tech coordinator groups and I hear another and curriculum designers will say another. It's, you know, has there been a shift? I think so. I think it's still based on reading, writing, and numeracy and always will be. But I think we're reading differently. I think we're writing differently. You know, and it's all based on this new information landscape that's multimedia, multimodal, and social. The next book I read was Howard Gardner's, and his definition of intelligence was like just so clear and concise. And he said it's the ability to solve problems that one encounters in real life, the ability to generate new problems to solve, and the ability to make something or provide a service that's valued in one's culture. So I'm going to fast forward now. On the wings of that little interpretation of intelligence, like 2 days later, I'm in my library. My colleague Eleanor is having a pre-conference, video conference with NASA. And they're talking about this great project, and it's just Eleanor and two of the teachers, and I'm over here with the class, but I have one ear listening to NASA. And the two NASA scientists that run this educational program, one of them is Donner Higsby, who's a seasoned NASA scientist, and he has a younger cohort with him. And I heard out of the corner of my listening space, I heard, well, what students need today? And I was like, hold that thought. And I ran over and I said, Donner, what do students need today? What does NASA say students need today? And he said, well, I can't speak for NASA, but I can speak as a NASA scientist. I said, okay. And he said, they need creativity. You need to ask hard questions. And this is like validating the stuff I had just read. So I said, well, give me an example. And the younger scientist started to laugh. And he said, well, here's the one we got him with. Apparently, they ask a series of questions when you knock on NASA's door and say, I'd like to work here. And he said, this is the situation. He said, you have a wall, ceiling to floor. On one side of the wall are three switches, pardon me. And on the other side of the wall are three light bulbs. You may walk around the wall once. How do you figure out which switch controls which light bulb? How do you do it? No. My kids, when I ask my kids when I speak with students, the kids' first thing they say is, well, you have your friends on the other side of the wall. I thought natural collaboration, but that's not the answer. There's a way to do this. Floor to ceiling. One side of the wall has the three switches. The other side has the three light bulbs. And you may only walk around the wall once to look. Any ideas? Mull it around a little bit? Well, when I was listening to Donner, I'm in my head going, okay, turn this switch on, turn me up. And I literally said this out loud. I said, oh, this is math, isn't it? And he said, is it? Can you solve this with an algebraic equation? I said, no, you know what? I need the wall. If I actually had the wall here, I could figure out how to do it. And the young scientist was laughing and laughing. He said, I was the same way. I didn't feel too badly since the young scientist at NASA didn't know it either. Here's the answer. Anybody want to take a shot before I give you the answer? Okay. Yeah?
If you have the wall in front of you and you turn on the light on one side, it's the reflection.
Oh, reflection. That's not the answer, but that's true.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. I hadn't heard that one before. Good. No, it's actually much simpler than that. Okay. Here's the wall. You turn the first switch on, and you wait. And you turn it off. You turn the second switch on, and you walk around. One light bulb is warm, and the other light bulb is on. And you've now solved your problem. But you were thinking light. You weren't thinking heat. And that's the kind of thinking, problem-solving, creative problem-solving, critical thinking, that one scientist at NASA says we need to develop in our students. I can't remove this from any presentation I do. These are our students. This is my lab in my library. And sure enough, on the first spring day, but over there, you're seeing the empty Dell lab. Over here are the Macs, and they're full of kids. And we're working in Second Life, and the kids are engaged, and they're busy, and they're focused, and all of a sudden they hear one of them say, Miss Sheehy, look, there's a pigeon. But I look over at the pigeon on the windowsill, I look back at the kid, and I think, come on, it's a pigeon. We live in New York, get over it, you know, get back to work. But I watched the pigeon, who then decided to hop down on the keyboard and start taking a little journey, leaving gifts along the way. So me, being the tech-savvy teacher, I go, oh, photo opportunity. And I turn to my clerk about 50 steps away at the circulation desk and I say, Annie, get the camera. And Annie goes into the back room and unlocks the cabinet and comes out with the digital camera. And as she's walking towards me, I turn to where the pigeon is. And I'm about to say, take a picture of the pigeon. And this is what I see. And these are the cell phones they're not allowed to have in school. And my point is, it's their birthright, and we're denying them. And that's all I'm going to preach. So we've got shifted. We've got shifted literacy, we've got shifted learners. We've got learners now that are interested in media-based, social, immersive, hands-on, active learning. They want to solve problems. So if your vision of a classroom is closer to this, and your kids are like this, maybe it's time for this. Or this. What are we going to do? This is the end of this portion of the soapbox. What are we going to do to make this shift? What are you teachers willing to give up? When I say this, I don't mean your comfort. I mean your power. What are your administrators ready to do to allow teachers to be the professionals they are? When are we going to start involving the community in the learning process? When are the universities going to start sending us new teachers who don't think WebQuest are cutting-edge technology? When are we going to shift? And what can you do about it? You start in your own room, in your own building, at your own meeting, by a little disruptive innovation. You get out of the problems and into the solution. And if you can only do that in your classroom or your library, it's a beginning. You start designing that curriculum to meet the needs of those students. All right, enough. That was the soapbox. Thank you for staying through. So in 2006, Radical Central School District established the first middle school on the Teen Grid of Second Life. Now that's powerful. When you look at your kids and you say, you are the first. Not the first in the county. Not the first in New York State. Not the first in the United States, but the first on planet Earth. Those kids are invested. Those kids are going to do the right thing because they know the world is watching. And I've literally said things to them like, you get this wrong and you're going to kick education back 50 years. You get this right and you're paving the way. You're the pioneer. And they've gotten it right. So what is Second Life? How many of you have avatars inside Second Life? How many of you are in Second Life already? Okay, only a few. That's fine. That's fine. A multi-user virtual environment, or a MOVE, M-U-V-E, and you'll hear all these cute little presentations like get a move on and moving in and things like that. But it's a multi-user, meaning there's many participants synchronously. It supports constructivist learning. It conveys a sense of presence, and that's what's very difficult to explain to people until you actually experience it. Ladies, it's like trying to tell somebody what childbirth is, and you just don't get it until you've done it. Or from what I hear, it's like having a grandchild. You don't really understand how that feels until you have one, is what I'm told. Full customization of avatars. That's me in 2005, and that's my avatar in 2005. There's a thriving online economy conducting millions of U.S. dollars a month. Now, let me tell you what this means. In Second Life, there is a unit of currency called the Linden Dollar. On the Second Life exchange, 2 days ago was the last time I was there, the exchange rate of Linden Dollars to U.S. dollars was about $256. Linden dollars to one U.S. dollar. We get around that to 250.
What does that work? Can you say that work in Linden?
Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N, is the name of the company that supports Second Life. Linden Lab, One Lab, is the name of the company. So the currency is Linden dollars. Now, what does this mean? This means that if you go into Second Life and using the built-in tools, you figure out how to make a T-shirt that says Obama on it, and you decide to sell those t-shirts for $10 million each to other avatars who want their avatar to have an Obama t-shirt, and you sell 25 of them, you've made $250 million. You then go out to the Second Life Exchange, you log in and you say, please convert my living dollars to US dollars and put them in my PayPal account. You've now made real money selling virtual goods, virtual services. There are people earning in excess of, okay, here's an example. I'm sitting in a conference next to a young lady. She introduces herself to me. I'm Auntie Chung. How do you have Auntie Chung. I know that name. Okay, a month later, Auntie Chung was on the cover of Business Week because she was earning in excess of $500,000 a year selling virtual real estate in Second Life. Now, it's hard to wrap your head around, but let me tell you, this is a motivator for the kids. This is a huge motivator, the fact that there's a live economy within the virtual world. And it's a thing that people have grasped right away. Lended Lab did something very different. That's the picture of the exchange market. They put in very simple building tools to create. So literally everything you see in Second Life is made from basic shapes or primitive shapes or prims as they're called. So there's spheres and there's cubes and etc. I'm sorry, I keep walking in front of the screen for you. And what you do with these shapes in terms of how you texturize them and how you manipulate their size and shape and how you link them together. And so everything in Second Life is built. So the kids are all over this and they grab it very, very quickly. Now, I'm not a programmer. I have a hard time with HTML. But there's a very simple, I've been told, scripting language in Second Life to animate the objects you create. I've been told it's similar to a C++ scripting language. My kids are all over it. And here's what happens. The first day, I give them an introduction. Here's Second Life. Here's the building tools. I build a chair or something simple. And the kids are, wow. And I am the god. About a week later, I'll look over somebody's shoulder and I'll see, wow, that's really cool. How did you do that? Oh, sit down, machine. Let me show you. About 2 weeks after that, I look over the shoulder and I say, wow, that's really cool. How'd you do that? And you get it. But what's that translate to you? That translates to success for me. I've given up the power. I didn't have to be one step ahead of them in order to feel safe and sound. They flew past me, but I was controlling the learning journey. They were still doing a project of mice and men with me. They were still doing an exploration of body image with me and my teachers. They were still doing a geometry project with me and my math teacher. But they were all over the tools and the interface and the scripting. What went way past me in very little time. And what a wonderful community developed inside our island because of those kids helping each other. And finally, everything you see in Second Life is user-created. The company didn't build the world and invite you in. What the company did was said, it's your world, your imagination, you create it. And because of the fact they said that, they also took it a step further and said, and if you create it, you own it. Which is why this thriving economy has evolved. Because in other MMORPGs or other multi-user virtual environments, everything belongs to the game creator, to the company that supports the game. In this, if you make it, you own it. You own the IP rights to it. So you can sell it if you own it. Okay, let's move forward a little bit. So that's what our islands looked like when they were delivered to me. And I was not a builder and I was not a scripter. I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? Look, I've got all this land. It felt like Columbus. But basically what I did was I did a Raise Your Schoolhouse with all the people that I had met in Second Life, and 75 different people from all over the world came and contributed their time and their energy and their knowledge and their expertise and their content, and we built our islands. And because we were the first, I really cashed in on that, and I was absolutely ruthless with just approaching anybody and saying, it's for the kids, will you do this for me? I have no money. And they did. Now, there are other options available to you now because there are now tons of content creators on the teen grid. For educators, what does it have for you? It's unique. It's flexible. This can be an extension of your regular classroom. It can be your classroom. It can be someplace you just jump into once or twice a year for a special project. You know, I have teachers that use it in all different varying ways. It can be used to extend learning or demonstrate learning. You know, you say you understand this, come in to Second Life and demonstrate for me. An example of that is a math project we just did where the kids were basically finishing a unit on geometry. The teacher is not a particularly tech-savvy teacher. And she said to me, can we use Second Life? And I said, well, what did you just finish doing? She said, we just finished geometry. And I said, okay, write down a geometric concept that the kids have studied on a post-it note and give them out to the kids and send them to the library and we'll do this together. And the kids had this post-it note that said congruent angle or midpoint or intersecting lines, whatever it was. And I said, build it. And what happened, and I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit, but it's really cool. What happened was the kids went to this location on the islands and they started building. And I said, you know what? If you finish building it before and you have enough time, add a note card to it. This would just be a little piece of text that would come up when you put it on something. Add a note card to it with a definition explaining what it is. So they're doing that. And then I'm looking over. I get a lot of knowledge looking over their shoulders. I'm looking over and this one child is writing and writing and writing. I look at the computer next to him and that child is writing and writing and writing. And it's like this, he says, no, honey, just a definition. He looked at me and he said, Miss She, if I took the time to build it and I took the time to explain what it was, then I'm going to give them a problem to solve with that information. And if they get it right, they give me a linen dollar. And if they get it wrong, I give them a linen dollar. The other way around. Then now, they had taken the learning, here's where the bar was, and just knocked it up, and that has happened time and time and time and time again. Every time we set the bar, the kids instilled the rigor. So what I finally done, I am so all over my presentation right now, but what I finally done was say, okay, we're looking at doing a new unit in social studies and Second Life about integration. I need 10 student volunteers to help me design a curriculum. And that's how the curriculum gets developed next. In fact, one project I'm going to show you, I wasn't involved in the curriculum design. The kids did it themselves. They didn't invite me. All right, what about, here's the...
How much does this cost?
Purchasing an island. If one island will support 35, 40 avatars simultaneously, that doesn't mean you can't have 1,000 avatars. They just can't all be on the island at the same time. About 35, 40, after that thing starts slowing down and getting laggy, and that's the worst thing to do to kids. So it's 16 acres of virtual space. Now, this can be a secure intranet space, or it can be an open space, and I'll explain how you do either of those things. The cost of that is $700, a one-time fee of $700 for the island. You bought your island, $700. But then you have to pay $147.50 a month for the maintenance of that island.
Sorry.
That's okay. I usually tell kids, put them on the desk.
Sorry.
Except we probably all have the same ringtone and we're all going, where am I supposed to be? That's my alarm. So Round was started with three islands. And after the first year, we were so successful that we added three more. We've now had 2,600 students come through the islands. All those accounts are still active. The senior year this year was the first year that came through because we start with 8th grade because there is an age limit. You have to be 13 years old. Half my 7th graders are and half aren't. So just to be safe, we did for the 8th grader. And it's 13 to 17. That's another issue. Because if you're teaching a senior class inside Second Life in sociology, and your students turn 18, they have to be moved to the main grid. Now, we can talk about this ad nauseum. Linden Lab is aware of the fact that these are issues. They've been making lots and lots of changes. That is something that's on their
it's on their horizon of addressing these issues and making things a little bit more user-friendly for educators, because there are other grids coming up. And I'll mention them later, but Second Life's not the only game in town anymore, and I'm not married to it. As soon as Reaction Grid or Immersive Ed or any of the other open sim formats get there, I'll be all over it like a cheap suit. But right now, they're just not stable enough for me, especially having teachers and kids in Second Life. I couldn't move them to a less stable environment now. But I do have a presence on all of those, so I'm keeping an eye on them and, you know, offering assistance where I can. So let's talk about the main grid and the cane grid. My superintendent is actually not at this presentation, but he's actually here at the conference. If he were here, he would tell the story and much better than I. But I went, it took me 9 months to develop this presentation. In 2004, I found out about Second Life. And at the end of 2005 was when I delivered my proposal to the district. I had 10 minutes. I can't do anything in 10 minutes, but I have a great mentor on the district level who said, this is what's important, Jeff. This is what's important, just get back across. And it was very cool because both my superintendents were there and the principals, and they said, okay, you've shown us that it could be a sound pedagogy. You've shown us how it will support learning. Show us everything we say. So I explained to them all I'm explaining to you now is there are two main grids. One is the teen grid and one is the adult or main grid. The adult or main grid is 18 and over. Until about a year ago, it was very possible for you to be on the main grid and just stumble across something shocking, inappropriate, in bad taste, that had a lot of X-rated content. They have since moved all X-rated content to its own continent. So you're not going to like get into Second Life and accidentally stumble across something pornographic or sexual or risque. Or now, that's not to say that there still isn't adult conversations and things like that going on, but that's what the main grid is all about. There are no teens allowed. No one under 18 is allowed in the main grid. The teen grid, as I said, is 13 to 17. Until such time as Suffern Middle School and Global Kids came onto the teen grid, there were no adults allowed on the grid except for the Linden employees. The teen grid is for teens. What Linden Lab did for us educators collectively was said, if you want to work in the teen grid with teens, we can't let them come onto the main grid with you. Out of the question. We can let you get onto the teen grid with them, and here are the conditions in which one is you have to have a third-party background check. Now, originally that was done through a company called Aspartame International, who did a criminal record check on you and just sent Linden Lab a pass-fail. Depending on where you had lived and how many years you had lived in those places in the last 10 years, it could be anywhere from $35 to $125. So when I laid out $700 for an island and $150 a month for maintenance, I'm looking at Linden Lab saying, now you're telling me that my 45 teachers have to go pay for this? No can do. My teachers are certified. Why do I need to have, you know, they've had a background check as part of their certification. Oh, they have? We didn't know that. Well, that's good. Well, then just have Human Resources send us a list of the teachers and a statement saying that part of their certification process was a background check, and we'll accept that. So every step along the way, this company is basically just covering their back for legalities. You know, that's really a lot of the reasons behind what we perceive as these hurdles and hoops we have to jump through to get on there and teach our kids. Now, the teen grid, you can do one of two things. You can establish an island, and those prices that I showed you were educational pricing, which is 50% cheaper than the regular pricing of education or nonprofit. You can establish your island and say, this is our island, it's for educational purposes, these are the five adults who are going to be on that island, and they get locked on that island, and they get clearly identified as an adult. The Global Kids adults say, certifiable adults. I like that. You cannot leave your island. You're locked there. That's the only place you can go. Your students, if you're running a school, will also be locked onto your island. So you're a totally secure private estate. The rest of the team grid cannot see you. They cannot see you on the map. They cannot communicate with you. They cannot exchange content with you. You're alone. Even though you're on the team grid, it's like you're alone. If you were a nonprofit organization such as Global Kids, what they did was they established their island. Their adults were locked onto their island, but they left their island open so any of the 13,000 kids on the team grid could come and visit and leave and what have you, participate in their events and what have you. So this was great. I mean, if I could look at the school board and I could look at my principals and I could look at parents who inquired, and there were very few, and say, your kids are absolutely safe. Nobody's getting in. You know, I had some NASA people, I had some experts come in, they had to have the background check. But after a year of that, I started saying, this is a little backwards. There's like thousands of kids on the team grid. Thousands of kids who might speak Mandarin Chinese when my kids are studying Mandarin Chinese. Thousands of kids who might be working on the same project. Thousands of kids who might want to talk about global warming or racism or any of the hurdles that these kids have to deal with in their lifetime. And we are cloistered. We have the wall up. So it's a wonderful thing to look at your school board and say, totally safe, secure, nobody gets in. But it's really a backward thing if we're talking about trying to make global citizens out of our students. So this last year, I was actually given permission to have a drawbridge, which I can allow people in, and at the end of the day, then you go home, get out. But it was a big step. We've since had the Elizabeth Morrow School, which is an independent school from New Jersey, put their island next to ours. Seminole County Schools put 8 islands next to ours. Lane Community College, which is working with a high school in Oregon, put an island next to ours. So we're basically building our community now. And that's an underhanded invitation, that if you do think you're moving in this direction, please contact me. I have my cards and stuff out over here, and come and build our learning community together. Any questions about the team grid, main grid, or any questions about anything so far?
Yeah. I came in a little late. Did you get a grant to do this?
Nope.
How did this start? Or did
nope,
not go over
I work
yet.
In Ramapo.
I'm sorry?
I work in a very, it's not an over-the-top affluent district. It's,
Where is it?
Ramapo Central School District is in Rockland County, New York, Suffern.
Okay.
We're about 45 minutes north of Manhattan.
So like in Westchester area?
It's north of Westchester.
Okay. And did you go to some professional development training? How did you get your professional development in this area?
I created an account in Second Life and lived there for a long time.
Like we do everything else.
Yeah. I do professional development. There, and now inside Second Life, there's tons of free professional development. If the island is the first place I would go. Yeah.
What kind of check does the team go through to get on the team island?
No, let me be a little clear. The teams don't go through any background check. You create your student account. So I have what's known as a Ridge API. In about 2 weeks, my district technology person will give me a list of all the incoming eighth graders and their student IDs. I'll create an Excel sheet with a CSI, pop it up to my Ridge API with a list of stars, planets, moon, whatever. I'm running out of lists of names for kids. But their name, their Second Life name, will have nothing to do with their real life name, and there'll be no information going to Lumen Lab about that child except for their student ID, which they can identify them by. I can identify them by. So. But many of my kids, I'd say probably about 25%, once they are in Second Life, go home and get permission to create their own Team Grid account. So they have 2 avatars. They have their school avatar on Ramapo, and they have an avatar on the team grid that can go anywhere on the team grid and do it. But I always say, you can't do that in school. I can't, because I have no recourse if something uncomfortable happens to you in that menu. I only can control Ramapo and take charge of what happens on Ramapo. But most of them do that. Zoe, how am I doing?
Good.
Okay. So again, private island, rigorous background checks, no access, and oh, I didn't mention this. So after the first year, now we've got 8th and 9th graders in. And my boss comes to me and he says, how do we know, we have not had any problems. You know, we're getting very known for this, so I don't want anything to go wrong. And I said, well, everything's fine. You know, I read the kids the Ryan Act. They understand the rules right off the bat. This is an extension of our school. The same rules that apply in school apply in Second Life, you know, in terms of, you know, we're a full value school. You know, no bigotry, no bias, no racial, no gender, and none of that. And no bad language. Your physical appearance. The avatars have built-in underwear, so they can never be naked. But I don't even allow, if you're in humanoid form, you have to adhere to the school dress code, which means no jeans, hair guys, and hair girls. So a lot of them choose to be creative, non-human avatars, you know. A lot of them just choose to be fairies or dragons or whatever. Where was I going with that? Oh, the adult supervision. So what we did after the first year, because a lot of the learning was going on at night. You know, a lot of the kids were going and walking at night, and I was in grad school at the time. And I would have my grad school work on this computer, and my laptop over here with Second Life open, and I'd kind of look over every once in a while, and there'd be kids out in front over here, four over there, kids flying around and doing stuff, and really creative stuff. But I was a ding away if somebody needed me. So I said that to my boss. I said, well, you know, he said, you're not there 24/7, and the islands are open 24/7. You know, and he said that there's too much potential there for something, some mishap. So we had a scripter build up he told me later, it was very simple, a security system, which just means that when I'm going to be leaving the islands for the day, I just go to a certain location, type in a code, hit enter, and the security system is on, which means that when a student goes to log in after that, he can actually, or she can actually log in, but they'll start bouncing around. It's an ejector system, and then their computer will freeze, and that's that. So, and the thinking, I understand, the thinking behind that was you wouldn't put the kids in the lunchroom, you wouldn't put the kids in the classroom, you wouldn't put the kids out in the playground without some kind of adult supervision, if this truly is an extension of our campus. We need to do that there, too.
Let's move on to some curriculum here.
Questions? Okay, my teachers, really the first year I had 400 kids and 9 teachers, and those 9 teachers were the ones who had been coming into my office during that whole 9 months that I was developing the proposal. I always had Second Life on my computer, and those are the teachers who came into my office and would look over at the laptop and say, what is that? And I got it down to a formula. They look at Second Life and say, what is that? And I would turn to them and say, what are you doing in your classroom right now? And whatever it was that they responded to me, I would say, okay, this is what you could do with that in Second Life. And I'd give them a concrete example of their global journey. So the ones that were like, yeah, weren't the first 9 I approached. But the ones that said, oh, how cool, I want to learn more about this. Those were the 9 that I approached. And it was a nice, mixed from the different curriculum areas. You know, I had most everything covered. And I basically brought them into the main grid. Whenever I do professional development, I don't care if you've already got your islands in place, I train you in the main grid. Because that's where you're going to develop your professional learning network. That's where you're going to join ISTE, or the New Media Consortium, or Discovery Educators, or Google Educators, all happening in Second Life. You know, it's really a shame that when something like this first starts up, if there's any X-rated content, that's what you hear about. I mean, that was really, does anybody remember the beginning of the internet? It was all about pornography. You know, nobody even talked about the educational potential of the internet. You know, it was like, we didn't go there. Well, that was really what Second Life was like in the beginning. And the story I was going to tell you earlier was my superintendent, after he asked all the right questions and we got started, about 3 months after my kids were in there already, the Time Magazine article came out that was called My So-Called Second Life, and it was all about where you buy your genitals and things like this. And he just walked into the library holding Time Magazine and said to me, do I still have a job?
And I had to, again, explain to him that we were on the teen grid, not the main grid. Teen grid was strictly PG, that we were even on the teen grid. We were a private estate. But it took, you know, it took him a while to really understand that whole thing. So, you know, if you're going to propose this, if you're going to bring this to someone, be armed with as much information as you possibly can, because, you know, those questions come up even today when most of them have been addressed already. But that's where I train my teachers, on the main grid, and then they have a second avatar on Ramapo. Because this is where you can go to an ISTE presentation. I mean, I was lucky enough to, one of my jobs with ISTE is to run the ISTE Introverse talk show, the television program that happens in Second Life. And I got to interview awesome people. You know, oh, I just read his book. I'm interviewing him next week. It's like really cool stuff. But all you have to do is be in your pajamas with your cup of tea or whatever it is, beverage you have at night, and log into Second Life and fly over to ISTE Island and sit down in the auditorium, turn your sound on, and you're at a free conference. You're at a free presentation in your pajamas at home. You can participate in chat. You can participate with voice. But your main grid presence, no matter if you're going to end up on the teen grid or not, is really important. Okay, we're going to skip the movie since we have no volume. Let's move into this. Questions? Okay, so my very first class, I'm going to rush through the beginning. How am I dealing with time? Zoe, you keeping track of my time?
You are at 49 minutes.
Okay, thank you. That's perfect. The first class I brought in, and I didn't do this as a stroke of genius. I did it out of convenience. But there is a classroom right next to my library, which is my special ed classroom. It had 9 students in it. It's a nice small group. They're right next to the library. They're not on a bell schedule. I can pull them in whenever I want. And I brought those kids in first. And I gave them like a 2-week jump on the rest of the student body, the rest of the 8th grade class. And I just gave them some basic information. I showed them the tools and I said, investigate, ask me if you have any questions. And I made them peer mentors. That was what the label over their head said. Well, in hindsight, that was a stroke of genius. And I've done it every year since. Because those kids, and we know those kids, right? We know those kids that come to school in the little bus that have their special classroom that, you know, just don't get to be successful at anything. Those kids were elevated to the highest of esteem inside Second Life because they knew just a little bit more than everybody else. They were there sooner. Their teacher said, well, we're doing a unit on inventions, and maybe we could do something with that. So they did. They came in and they had an invention convention where whatever they researched, they built in 3D, and then they took their research and copied and pasted it into a note card, and we had like an invention museum. But what the teacher reported back to me, now this is the first group I brought in, and I remember who they are. And he said, these kids are focused, they're invested, they're excited about their learning, they're taking ownership of their learning, they want to do more, they want to come in during lunch. I said, well, that's pretty cool, because I expected engagement. That's really what I expected from this. Just something that really would grab the students' attention and make me to get them engaged. So the next thing we did was the class next to the library on the other side was a library media course where the kids worked in conjunction with either the social studies or the science unit alternate years and went through the research process and then either created an iMovie or something. So instead of their final product of their research being an iMovie, they had the option of doing it in Second Life. And they created a catastrophic events museum. Again, nothing earth-shattering that we couldn't have done with posters or whatever in the real world. This was in 2006. But the kids, again, the teacher reports back to me, every single kid is engaged. They're having great conversations about what they're researching and learning. This is awesome. The family consumer science teacher came to me and she said, well, we do a research project in entrepreneurs. This was cool. The kids went in, same thing. We're still finding our way in 2006. You know, what are we doing that can't be done in the real world? Nothing yet. We're still pretty much duplicating stuff you could do in the real world. But they came in and they had an area with biographies and resumes of people that they had researched and note cards and things. It was interesting that one child decided to do the CEO of Linden Labs, Philip Rosedale. But then they said, we want to start a business. And that's when things got interesting. Because then it was, all right, then you need to develop a business plan. And you need to submit your plan to a panel. And the panel has to either approve it or not. And then you have to do the hiring procedure. So everybody has to have a resume. And you have to go through interviews. And if you need classes, you'll have mock interviews. And this was all going on in the second one. And it was going on as Avatar. And I'm going to skip forward after a few more examples and talk about that. I showed you the example of the Geo Gallery, and there's the kids' building. That was the midpoint, I believe. This was a really cool, one of my teachers thought of this. She said, you know, what I'd really like to do is give each of my students $100 and put them on a bus and take them to the mall. And have them go shopping, have them have a lift, have them go to a restaurant, calculate the tip, you know, real world applications of money and money management things. I thought, we can do something like that in Second Life, and we created a flea market. And every student was given 50 linen dollars, and they had a list of things they had to buy for the beach party. So they had to get a bathing suit and suntan lotion and a water bottle and a surfboard and a towel and an umbrella and what have you. But when we set up the flea market, we had, and this is an early picture of it, not everything was finished, we had all these items out, but the sign would say something like, surfboards, $45 linen, 10% off. Or water bottle, $19 linen, 17% off. So the kids had to do the math. Now here's what happened. The first year, everybody played by the rules, everything was dandy, we moved on. The second year, this is great. The second year, the first class comes in, they're ready to do the project. You know, they hadn't done the project before. Those kids moved on. And I see them doing this, and I see all these instant messages going. And I see one kid take his building tools out and start putting other signs next to everything. Some kid was doing the math and putting the answers in. What does a teacher do?
Check it out.
Heck no. Is that cheating or is that collaborating? And I said, we just better make sure that the math is right. But how ingenious was that? I would never have thought of that. But they thought of it and they did it. And then the next kids came in and double-checked the math and then gave the, oh, okay, for the next period came in. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And the teacher loved it. The teacher, like, was not, like, upset. She thought it was great. This was a powerful unit. The first year we did it, it was a social studies teacher who had done a unit on immigration, and we just basically recreated an Ellis Island, where they just uploaded pictures from the internet, and they put them on posters, and they did their research. And at the end of that unit, the first year, I said to the kid, so how was it? How'd you like it? And there was conversation, and I did the same thing with the next period. In the third period class, I had a kid raise his hand, and as the kid raises his hand, the social studies teacher kicks me under the table, and he goes, oh, no. I was like, and the kid raises his hand, and he goes, this was really stupid. And I said, all right, what? Tell me more. And he goes, well, this was really just a dumb project. And I said, why? And he said, well, we spent like 3 weeks reading that novel, and then you had us like for weeks on the Ellis Island website reading primary source documents. This is exactly what he did. And he said, and then you go on into here, and all we're doing is spitting it out. I'm like, well, what could we have done? And he said, well, we've done all this research. Why weren't we role-playing the Ellis Island experience? And he didn't say exactly like that, but he said role-playing. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, half of us could be immigrants and half of us could be Ellis Island immigration officers, and you'd have to get into Ellis Island. So you'd have to know the right questions to ask, and you'd have to have the right answers. Because they had read a novel that was the whole story of, and half the family got in and half didn't and what have you. And on the Ellis Island website, there was the, like, charts of the, you know, the reasons you wouldn't get in, and they were reading primary source documents, accounts of different families and people's experiences.
So I said, that's cool. So we did it. Now here's what happened. The kids reported back to me. She almost threw up. My hands were sweating. I was so nervous. Why? Well, my mother got in. My brother got in. I wasn't going to get in because I have scabies. Well, we decided as a team that we're going to be the family and one of us wasn't going to get in. They got into this so deeply once we introduced the role-playing element, and here's what happened. And it's 3 years now we've done it. Here's what happened. 2 days is what we spend. Actually, three. The first day they spend getting their avatar costume appropriately. But the first day, immigration officer, immigrant. You interview me, I answer the questions, I either get in or I don't get in. I wait in the line, I look at the pictures, okay? Day one, usually 50 to 60% of the avatars get into Ellis Island, get through, make it to America. They change roles. You're the immigrant, I'm the immigration officer. 97% of the people get in. And then the conversations that happen after that, fascinating. Because my district has a lot of immigrants. And the three districts I've been gifted to work in have all had an immigrant population. And these conversations are powerful. And they're powerful because they're meaningful. And now the kids have some real-life connection to something they studied in history, but they're also powerful because they function as avatars. Next. I'm going to skip ahead to that. I'll go through other lessons if I can, but I want to talk about that avatar piece. What's up, Zoe?
Did they get to go into New York, like, in
Second Life?
Yeah.
We actually had, you landed at the Statue of Liberty where you picked up your trunks and your stuff and you actually got changed as an avatar. And then you crossed the bridge over to Ellis Island where the big Ellis Island building was. And then when you went into the building, it was designed exactly like the pictures we saw on the internet. The kids and I built it. You had to like walk down a long line until it was your turn, and then you sat at a desk and you got interviewed by an immigration officer. And there was an infirmary unit, because apparently a lot of people got sent to the infirmary.
Yeah.
You had to wait a few weeks, that kind of thing. So it was pretty real, but you know, you never actually got to go hang out in New York. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit because I want to make sure that we have time for pertinent questions from you guys. Right here is where I want to be. So let's talk about, you've heard me say this a number of times today, let's talk about that whole avatar peak. I kept seeing this time and time and time again, where a teacher would say to me, Patty, every one of my kids is participating. Everyone. You know, you can never class. It's the 5 or 6 hand movers, 5 or 6 kids in the back who don't want to be there and make it very clear to me. And then the group in the middle that are playing school. You know, certain days they're gay, certain days they're not. They're pretty much doing what they have to do together, B or A, whatever it is, the mom is based upon. Okay? I mean, not every classroom, just dinner. That goes away when you're functioning in the virtual world as avatars. And I didn't understand why. I didn't understand why I kept getting the same report from every single teacher. I didn't understand until I started talking to the kids. And the kids were saying to me things like, I'm really just as smart as everyone else, and in Second Life I can be. Or, in Second Life nobody knows who went to college before. Or, I'm an expert and in Second Life. And really, if I'm we're just like a machine. I'm just looking stupid stuff and I was only going to find it in the lunchroom next Sunday. So it was like they had this freedom of anonymity provides them. But here's
here's the piece I don't get. On day one, when I've given them the soapbox, and it's not three strikes and you're out, you break the rules once, you're out of here, it's too important for anybody to laugh it up for everybody else, blah, blah, blah. The first thing they do when they get into Second Life is tell each other who they are. Now, their names are like Starshire Ramapo, you know, Pluto Hilburn. The first thing they do is say, who are you, who are you, who are you? You know, great teachable moments, don't use any last names even though we're on private estate, all that good stuff. But they do. And yet they still function with a semblance of anonymity. As invested as they are in their avatar, in their appearance, in their behavior, they still function under the semblance. And when I finally got to speak to the experts in the field, they told me this was just an extension of the federal social moratorium. If you go back into your undergrad work and you had to take your mandatory ed psych course and you had to study Eric Erickson, and he talked about, especially for middle schools, adolescents need an environment where they can explore their personalities without fear of consequence, psychosocial moratorium, that's what happens when you come to the avatar. And guess what? It happens to adults too. So this whole piece, and if you want to learn more about this, Eric Erickson is the one who coined the term. James Paul G's work is phenomenal about games, learning, and literacy. And Constance Steinkuhler is also another expert in this. Ron, you give me a 5-minute sign because I know you're in this room next. So what is the identity thing? And here's how it was explained to me, and you can read more of this in James G's books, What Video Games Have to Teach Us About Learning and Literacy. But you bring your real identity into the creation of your avatar. So the avatar you're going to create is going to be, because it's going to be an extension of your personality, whether it's you want to explore something new and unique about yourself, or you want to try something you never considered in the real world, whatever. You bring that real identity. And then you develop your avatar identity, which is not just what you've created, but the role you've been assigned. And my teachers will say, today your avatar is a scientist. Behave like a scientist. Today you're a journalist. Today you're a poet in the village stage. Today you're an immigrant. And then coupled with that is the projective. Now I couldn't have spoken to this 2 years ago, but I can speak to it now. Because what does any of this really matter if we're not seeing a transfer to the real world? I don't care how great these kids can behave and have deep discussions and profound thought processes in the virtual world if I'm not seeing that transfer to the real world in some way, shape, or form. And we are. And let me give you the dramatic example of this. That same teacher that did the flea market math came into my office in tears. She just finished a class in Second Life. And she's literally holding back sobs and tears. And I said, Michelle, what's the matter? And she said, I've changed the name, of course. She said, Mary. Mary. I said, what about Mary? And she said, Mary has been talking in Second Life for 3 days straight now. And today she ran a discussion. I've copied everything she said to send to her mother. What's the big deal? Mary has been selectively muted since second grade, has not uttered a word in school. Dramatic examples? Yeah, that happened in my building. And I'm seeing little bits of that happen with every student. And it's not always the... You have to, like in any other learning environment, you have to look out for the level of frustration. So it's not always the academically high student that is successful in Second Life. In fact, my own observation has been that the student who is most frustrated in Second Life may often be the academically high achiever. And I've tried to figure out why. One girl literally threw her head down on the computer and went, I can't do this. And I said, what's the matter? She said, I can't type that fast. Ow, she's typing up a storm. You know, the other kids are typing up a storm, and she's like trying to keep up with the conversation. to the caliber that she's used to participating, very bright, very outspoken child, but her type is good. She doesn't have it. So I said, maybe I can help you out with this. And I said to her, you know, tell me about this. How, you know, she said, well, all my friends are on Facebook and I am, and I'm not allowed. Okay, so you come into the library, and we'll find ways during lunchtime to get your typing up to speed. But, I mean, you have to, just like in any other learning environment, 5 minutes, Brent, thank you. You have to be aware of, A, very clear expectations. I have the kids develop a rubric most of the time. B, you have to be, you know, clear expectations and clear boundaries. You know, this is what I'm looking for from you. These are the consequences. You know, my students know that if they break the rules, and the rules are very clearly outlined, and behavioral expectations are outlined, and if they break the rules one time, they're out of here. I usually say something like, you know, have fun making a PowerPoint, because that will be your cutting-edge technology. And they respect that. And yes, I have had to throw 6 kids out each year, too. Every year, a very similar circumstance. Boys. Excellent builders, scripters, become very territorial, start becoming too competitive and actually sabotaging each other's work, and then the language gets out of hand, and I get every email, every instant message, there's a record of it, it's in the file. So usually another student tells me, you know, made me very uncomfortable. I know that you don't allow that, and I didn't want to get thrown out, and I was in the beginning of the conversation, so, you know, and I don't set them up the lie, I bring them down to the office, and show them the chat, and I say, you're out. And I know I have to do it again for the rest of the year. And it breaks my heart, because there's always kids that, like, could really benefit from this, but I guess when you set the rules up, you have to abide by them. All right, let's start to wrap it up, because you have a great presentation happening right after this. So again, that avatar identity, the kids get to try on new roles, it's sit in a safe and secure place, and the esteem goes through the roof. This is quotes from my kids. I showed you most of them. Several people think I'm an expert because I act like one. And the one that's not on here is my most recent, I'm not good at math, but my avatar is. Challenges. If you don't have a good broadband pipe, you're probably going to have a hard time with Second Life, or at least with large use of it. Check your hardware, make sure, and usually any computers that are, you know, 2-3 years old are fine. Anything older than that, the graphics card may not be sufficient. You're going to still have to fight the hype, you know. There's still an uphill battle to really demonstrate this is powerful for education. Some kids can use it at home, some kids cannot. You have to be aware of that. And time. Now, here's what I tell my teachers when they say, oh, I don't have time for this. I know how overloaded you are. I know that you're, you know, you've got this, I've got to cover this with a test, blah, 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 blah. And what I say to my teachers is you're not looking for 2 weeks to do something in Second Life. You're taking that 2 weeks that you spend on this and you're moving it into here. You know, it's just changing your environment. It's not finding another lump of time to do that. The biggie. And really, I submit this to you. Now, what my teachers have done, a lot of the work in Second Life involves chat. The chat logs get sent to the teacher can use those for assessment. When they do things like the private seminars, the blockers share, or just reading circles. But a lot of it, too, how do you measure on a Scantron something? How do you measure something? But it's not this. Your own professional development can happen. Get thee to ITZY. I'd also like to remind you of a place that Bernard Jean Porter, almost wraps up, Jim. Please come up here, take my card, take Bernard Jean Porter has something called Atlanta's Rising Campus that I helped to establish with her. Most of it is free. There are paid courses. There is accreditation through Pepperdine University. is a fabulous, magical, if you know Bernadine at all, she's the author of Digitales. If you,